She disguised herself as a male hoping to study at a university. She said women can, quote, perfectly well philosophize while cooking supper. Once denounced by the Catholic hierarchy, Sor Juana is now hailed in her native Mexico as a national hero. She's been the subject of novels, a Netflix miniseries, a telenovela, and currently the play Heresy of Love at Illinois State University's Westhoff Theater. Director Robert Quinlan says Sor Juana's unique life deserves all the attention she can get.
She is somebody who had a voracious curiosity, an appetite for knowledge. She was said to have one of the largest libraries in Mexico during her lifetime. And she was really just fascinated by every subject. She wanted to learn everything she could possibly learn and make connections between different disciplines. In some ways, I think she did that more than other scholars of the time because she wasn't formally educated. So she was able to pick up books and make discoveries and connections that other people weren't making at that time.
You're here with a dramaturg for your show, Heresy of Love, Treasure Davis. Treasure, how is it that this obscure nun who lived so many centuries ago entered the consciousness of contemporary people?
She was always there, and scholars have picked up on her work, and there's just something really fascinating about her, especially when we live in this political spectrum of people feeling silenced. Women feel silenced in a lot of ways, and Sor Juana fought against that. She found ways to connect her studies to her faith, and that was really empowering.
How is it that she was able to go after this knowledge at that time when women weren't even allowed to be educated?
Well, she talks about being born with this gift that she didn't even really understand. She was taught to read by somebody else's tutor. She just kind of hung out with a tutor that taught her to read, and then the rest of her education was done on her own. She did ask her mother if she could dress as a boy to attend school, and she was told no.
She predated Yentl in that way.
that's right. But she wrestled with it, but as a devout Catholic too. She sought to understand why she was given this appetite for knowledge and to reconcile that with her faith. And that's one thing that the play deals with, is how do you have a spiritual life and a creative life at the same time?
Well, that's what I want to ask you. A couple of things, though. First, Treasure, how is it then that she did get some formal education? Who stepped in, if anybody, to give her that opportunity?
Her grandfather actually had an extensive library, and so she started reading those books, and she ended up gaining the attention of the viceroy and vicerine, and she entered into the court. And as a member of court, she was given a lot of access to things that she wouldn't have otherwise. And she was encouraged to write. The people of the court loved reading what she had to write. So because there was kind of a market for her work, she was allowed access to things that other people may not have.
Robert, you made reference just now to the tension between education and spirituality. Mm. Now, how did she decide to go into religious life? Was she forced into that, or did she see that as a way of allowing her to continue studying?
Well, nobody really knows. You know, the biographical information on her is sketchy. So playwrights or screenwriters interpret those details as they will. One thought is that she had a romantic relationship that ended badly, and she decided to go into the cloistered convent. There is also some thought that she really wanted the seclusion, but nobody really knows. It is interesting, though, that she was writing secular plays and poetry in the court and writing for the vicereine. Her plays are comedies. They deal with romance and sexual intrigue. And so you can kind of understand why some of the priests and bishops at the time were scandalized by the subject of her writing.
Well, first, she is a Carmelite nun,
That's
which
right.
is basically, even today, a cloistered nun. And then she goes into this order called the Hieronymites. How'd she end up in the Carmelites? And then what was the draw of the Hieronymites?
She was a member of the Carmelites for a year, and illness went through the convent. And it isn't really, historically, there is no proof of why she left. But we do know that she did have some more freedom to write. And so she fell into this kind of place where she was able to read and she was able to write.
Well, what was the Hieronymite order? What did it stand for?
Learning.
Learning and knowledge. Yeah, there was this sense of trying to understand theology.
So it was a life where she could really actively pursue her intellectual curiosities.
Your play, Heresy of Love, does it focus on a particular point in her life?
It really looks at the last few years of her life, in particular when this new archbishop, a very, very conservative archbishop, came to Mexico and took an interest in her and stopping her from writing.
An interest in quotes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he's quite, the character is fascinating. It's a real character from history. The Archbishop Aguijar y Cejas was his name. And it was during the Inquisition, and he was a hardliner. So he really did not believe that people should be pursuing secular entertainments of any kind. In fact, at one point in the play, he says, if they want entertainment, they can go to the auto de fe and watch the changing lights of burning men in flames.
So
he's pretty serious about his point of view. What I love about the play, though, is that it doesn't really take sides. You know, like you can, if you listen to the Archbishop, you can understand where he's coming from and why he has this pure belief that to save souls, you really need to keep people from these kinds of secular sins.
Treasure, an interesting fact is that she signs letters in which she renounces her work and calls herself at one point the worst of all people. Am I getting that?
The worst of all the world.
The worst of all the world. Isn't that kind of a sad ending for her?
It is. A lot of the things she talks about within the play are pulled from actual historical documents. So we have Sor Juana's letters. As far as her finally renouncing the things that she did, that's up for debate as well. I think that's the intrigue of writing about Sor Juana, because there are people who say that she never truly did renounce those things. She did burn her book. She did never write again. But things were found after she had passed that showed that she kind of held on to some of this stuff. So,
and maybe she was forced to write those letters. Isn't that another interpretation of what happened?
Yes.
Right.
Many people know of her because of her poetry. The late Latin American poet Octavio Paz has made her work much more widely known. What was it about her poetry that captured people's imagination?
Her poetry was seductive, which for someone in her position, you wouldn't think that that was there. But there is just such beauty in her language. It's beautiful. There's love and these real emotions. And she studied everything. She attributed what she sought out to learn to her relationship with God. So how can I understand all of these things in the Bible if I don't understand how everything works? And so that's all there. That beauty is there.
In the play, she says that in order to fully appreciate and understand theology, she also has to have an understanding of the human heart.
For both of you, what would you like a contemporary audience to take away about this 17th century figure?
I would love audiences to walk away and simply reflect on their own sense of faith and what they think about whether it's okay to censor someone. It's funny, when we started the rehearsal, it happened to be the day when Elizabeth Warren had to stop speaking on the Senate floor, and there was a hashtag, nevertheless, she persisted. And I went into rehearsal, and it was almost, there are almost lines in the play that are, nevertheless, she persisted. In fact, it could be an alternate title for the play. Mm-hmm. And so I guess to reflect on why women continue to be silenced in our society.
For me, being able to kind of reflect on someone like Sor Juana and imagine the bits and pieces and fill in the blanks, I would love to see people just take that idea and run with it. Like, who inspires you?
There is one line in the play that I love, and she says, "Why should our faith fear knowledge? For knowledge comes from him, and without it, we would be as the beasts wading through the mud and slime."
Well, certainly it's a message for our day. We've been talking with Robert Quinlan and Treasure Davis. He is the director and she is the dramaturg for the production at ISU's Westhoff Theater of Heresy of Love. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this fascinating woman.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
I'm Judy Valente.